Halton here. At MSA, our health and safety drives them to develop advanced safety equipment with performance and protection in perfect balance, like Globe Athletics, the latest innovation in turnout gear. Developed as athletic gear for firefighters, Athletics uses unique stretch fabrics that provide body contoured fit for unprecedented range of motion and flexibility. It's lighter weight, less bulky, and provides the protection you need from your turnout gear. Get the full story at msafire.com/globe.
Welcome to today's hangout. We got a great guest. Nick's here to talk about his article about being small. Of course, we have the boss here, Bobby Halton, and special guest host, Sam Villani, who's been an acting battalion chief in Montgomery County, Maryland. So we'll talk to him a little bit about his experiences in being acting and making that a success. I've always been taught that if there's an elephant in the room, you should introduce it. So I want to just briefly talk a little bit about what's going on with the IFF right now. Now, I invited and PJ Norwood invited Harold Schatzberger, the general president, on this show and the radio show. And if Harold does decide to come on, he will have a fair hearing. I believe, as fire engineering believes, in due process and hearing all sides of an argument. I remember back during the Ritchie case in the Supreme Court case, fire engineering published a commentary on from the Black Firefighters Association, a threat to national security. And then I published my reply to their piece. But I think it goes back, and I think I don't want to ever speak for Bobby Halton, but I think we're on the same page as this one with our old friend Benjamin Franklin. And I'm just going to read this real quick because I think it's important, and it's important for firefighters to realize that we can agree to disagree on things, and there are two sides. But this is Benjamin Franklin's apology for printers. This appeared in the Pennsylvania Gazette in 1731, and it said, "Printers are educated in the belief that when men differ in opinion, both sides ought equally to have the advantage of being heard by the public, and that when truth and error have fair play, the former is always an overmatch for the latter." So to put it in a modern speech, not less. Bobby, can you weigh in on that? And I'm sorry if I kind of spoke for you, but I think we're of the same mindset on this one.
No, and also Ben Franklin once said that if a publisher didn't publish anything that wasn't, that someone didn't find offensive, they would never publish anything at all. So, you know, you're always gonna have somebody that disagrees with you. It's just fine, it's human nature. I think what's very important though, in this particular instance, and remember, fire engineering was established. That, I hate to take up your time, Sam and Nick. We'll catch up really fast here. But fire engineering was established in 1877, devoted to the interests of the firemen of the nation. That was the language they used. Today, it's the firefighters of the nation, and predominantly, we serve the United States of America. We're read somewhat internationally, but not extensively internationally. I think Canada is very similar to us in their modalities, and some other countries that have an interest in American tactics. But primarily, we're interested in what's going on in the United States of America, which is more than enough than you can say grace over. You know, if you want to have stuff to write about, there's plenty going on. And so to that point, you know, we're certainly interested in what's going on with the union, and because it accounts for about 300,000 of America's firefighters, with 1.8 or 1.5 million firefighters out there. So that's not an insignificant number of people. To that point, Harold Schatzberger is one of my oldest friends, and I hold him extremely high in my esteem of him, and as a personal acquaintance, as is Eddie Kelly, one of my dearest friends. They're wonderful people. So all of that notwithstanding, they both deserve to have a fair hearing and a platform and an opportunity to discuss whatever it is they feel that they need to speak about. That is irrespective of how you feel about it emotionally. Today, it's all about feelings. This is not about feelings. This is about issues that Eddie raised in regards to the management and operations of our union. So And Harold has answered that, and the board is dealing with it and continuing to deal with it. And now there's an FBI investigation going into it. So, which may be the reason why Harold can't respond, Frank, is that he may be precluded because anything that he does say, if he's under investigation, could be, you know, weaponized against him, because, you know, people take a word and lots of times people do things which in hindsight turn out to be questionable, which they had no ill motive whatsoever when they did it. In other words, we ascribe motive after the fact as if people knew at the time when they were doing something that it was going to have unintended. Take Christopher Columbus, for example. He was looking for a route to India. He was not trying to destroy the Native American population in the Americas. See, that was not his intent. He was trying to find spices in India, ergo the term Indians. He was not, you know, trying to hurt anybody. But now people ascribe motive to him as if he was some kind of, you know, unscrupulous villain. And I don't know much about, Frank's an Italian, he can tell you more about Columbus. I'm an Irish guy. I'm hung up on St. Patrick. So, and Cromwell, who was a terrible person. Anyway, but I digress. To my point, Harold, Eddie, any member of the IAFF, any member of any firefighter at any time can access the fire engineering platform and can speak on this platform about politics with Frank and PJ, or they can, you know, write and we'll publish, you know, unedited what it is they have to say. And Harold knows that anytime he can access this platform in any format he wants, as can Eddie, as can, you know, Pat Morrison, or any of the other senior leadership of the IAFF. And we really like those guys. So it looks like Frank's having a little trouble. So we're going to continue along, because it's not easy being small. And I live in a community that has a small volunteer fire department and then a relatively small career fire department that abuts us. I believe about 100 plus or so members of the Owosso Fire Department. I'm not exactly sure how many active volunteers we have currently in Limestone Fire Protection District number 2. And I do work with both those organizations, just hanging out, you know, going to training stuff with them, kind of being old and in the way, refusing to give up, right? Refusing. What was it that was MacArthur, right, who said old soldiers never die, they just fade away? Same thing with old firefighters never die. We just fade away, you know, we show up less and less and whatnot. So Nick, you wrote a great piece. I thought it was a great piece. It's not easy being small. And if you haven't had a chance to read it, the audience, could you just kind of go over, you know, you spoke about your organization and a fire you had and a question your chief threw out there and how you created some systems. And you talk about, you know, calling for mutual aid and risk assessment, all that. So why don't you run us all through and then Sam can join in. I know Sam has some really good perspective on it because of where he is, surrounded by a myriad of organizations. So why don't you get us up to speed on the article and your thoughts behind it?
Well, thanks, Bobby. It's truly a pleasure to be here. I appreciate it. So, you know, it's funny. You just said a small department with 100 guys. In my world, that's almost, in Connecticut, that's almost a metro. It you know, we have 4 or 5 metros in the state. My version of small, where it really gets hard, is what I grew up in. So I got in the fire service in 76, got a job in 79. Spent a long time one place, got recruited to come back home, and then I've been chiefing for a while. I just retired in 18. So for me, small means if you can't put 10 to 15 people on the fire ground that are interior qualified, that are certified, that's small. I get to travel around with my part-time job. I've seen companies where there were 7 people in the company, and the 7 people in the company were trying to actually run a hose wagon, two ambulances, and a brush truck. It was just crazy. I've seen, you know, so it really depends on where you live and who you're next to. You know, if your next door neighbor has 5, 6, 7, 8 people on duty, they may be the big dog in the neighborhood. You know, and while it's hard to get our heads around because, you know, we have like 20 things we need, you know, we actually have like 18 to 20 people's worth of work to do them ultimately safely, you know, small departments don't have that option. You know, the example I gave in the article was, let's just take a ground letter. You know, two people, so the old rule was first number is how many people you need, right? 24-foot ground letter. Not in the small world. In the small world, that's one guy. As a matter of fact, I saw on one of the YouTubes, I actually saw a department teaching their people how to carry a 35 by themselves. But it's not, just crazy.
So, you know, a young lady who teaches for us at FDIC taught me how to throw a 35. I had never been taught how to throw a 35, but you can do it safely.
It's ugly.
Yeah, and it's ugly. But with the right technique, it takes time, and she didn't let me do it quickly. She could do it pretty quickly, but she was much healthier than I am. She's she's tiny too. She's a small gal, but she could throw it very adeptly. I struggled with it, but she did show me how to do it. So sorry, Nick, to interrupt.
No, but that's the point. That's the second part of this, is you can't be fooling around when you're small. You have to. So let's just take. You can literally, and I saw that LA does this as a drill for their recruits. You can take a 24, put it on the ground, put the roof ladder, hook it in, put your tool on it, and get your chainsaw, and you can drag that to the front of the building, and then flip it. Everything falls off. Then the 24 goes up. You set the roof ladder up. You grab your stuff, sling the saw, and you're up by yourself on the roof. That's a small department thing. Is it a safe thing? Is it the safest thing? No. It's the same thing. If you've got to do a three-story stretch, you may have two guys. That's
it. We do that in my department.
Huh?
That exact thing we do in our department. We have our truck companies are three-person staffing. So either the third or the tiller person and the officer go in, and the driver will do exactly that. If they got to get around to the rear of a garden apartment, they're putting a 28 or a 35 down, loading it up, and dragging it around back. And you know, the spurs on ground ladders, you can replace. They're easy to replace. So,
and that's the point I made in the article. If you got to go, you got to go. If you see a brother or sister hanging out the window, or if you see a victim at the window and you're it, and you're the outside guy, you got to do something. You might have the option. A lot of our guys, if they were on the ladder, they would also be going in with that first line, but they'll set the truck before they go. Because they just know that someone, not them, but a callback guy is going to eventually inherit that ladder, right? And then take the rest of it. But they might go to the roof of the ladder rather than use a ground ladder if they could. So whether it's stretching a hand line, I mean, you might have two guys on an inch and three quarter doing a three-story stretch. It is what it is. And, you know, once you get there, because you need to do what you have to do to get that stuff. The other thing that's a hiccup is when you're doing that, you got two or three people, let's say it's a good day, and you got three people on that first line, and you find a victim. Because we're doing searches and extinguishing at the same time. We don't have search teams on that initial line. Our whole mission in life is to get one line on the fire. You put the fire out, things get better. That's the mission. So literally, maybe everybody who's not tied down is on that one line to get to the scene of the fire. You find the victim. Well, this one just stopped. The stretch just stopped. And now we got to back out, because either we have to both carry that person, or even if we have the third guy or gal, they might be carrying the victim and you're protecting them from what's coming over their heads. Right? So now your extinguishment stops. And now the clock's ticking. And you got to get them outside. You may be able to drop them off to somebody else or not. And then you got to get back in and get the game back on, or someone else has to. And that's where we built the systems that Bobby talked about. You know, you have to have these heart-to-heart conversations with these other leaders. And you have to really say, and I used to have these very privately, not in front of the whole group. Listen, I need your group to do blah, 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 whatever it is, whether it's stretching the roof above, floor above, whatever it is. Can you do that at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday? Because it doesn't matter what you do training night. Training night, you had an hour before class to remind everybody to come. You got guys that don't ever come to calls, but they'll come for the points. That's not realistic. 10 o'clock on a Tuesday, who's coming? What are they bringing? What skills are they bringing? So you have to build the system where you're able to count on your mutual aid partners to do that. We were very lucky. We we had 10 different departments in our town, all different little subdivisions, but we had a great organization, Chiefs organization. We had one ICS system. We had one Mayday system. We had one FAST system. We had the same specifications for gear. The only difference was the colors. And so that when we could actually build an alarm that worked throughout that whole district. And so for us, that's how we built the system. And they knew what, everybody had the same expectations as to what jobs were going to happen at the same time. But we also had some conversations with folks, and they, if they kept saying, no, they can't do this, they can't do that, then you know what? We look for something they can do. If all you can do is get two guys out on 10 o'clock on a Tuesday, I've got a sprinkler riser for you. Absolutely. I've got a job for you to do that. I've got utilities for you to do. I've got, you know, whatever. You may be laying the line, and that's it. That may be your contribution to that event, because you don't have anybody to go inside. You know what I mean? I didn't mean to monopolize the conversation, but I'm sure you see the same thing down south.
No, and I would say that it's very important that folks read your piece, because it's a very well-written piece. And you raise a lot of really important questions inside that piece, like how, and I know Sam can speak this very well, because I know that the county does a great job of this where you live. What are the risks within your first due, right? So when we're talking about the really small departments, their first due is their whole community, really. Exactly. That's their first due. And so they've got to understand all of those risks. And some of them can be, you know, wickedly complex. I mean, my small volunteer fire department has some automotive places in there that are, dealing with extremely expensive and valuable cars. And so the protection of that facility, that facility is worth millions, tens of millions. So it's a big deal to the community, because it's a really important piece of the community. And then there are just a plethora of lovely homes and a mixture of mobile homes and everything in between that you can imagine. And so understanding that, as Sam and Nick pointed out, is huge in terms of assessment. And I loved your piece, because the one thing about your piece is Pete Prokilo, who's our web editor, was able to list about 5,000 articles that relate to it. I mean, it was a smorgasbord of, now you better read this, now you better read that, now you better read this.
By the way, is that where you keep your girl, in that fancy house? Or you keep your car in your house? What do you do?
I keep some of them here at the house. I keep some of them there.
I digress.
I really scaled back, because I physically I can't do much anymore. I can't wrench much anymore. I just can't.
But to your point, is a lot of places don't do community risk assessments. And in my part-time world, that is the first thing I hit the street. Matter of fact, before I arrive in the community, in the state infra system, I'm on, I got the census information, I got all that data. And then I'm literally Googling, driving around through the community, just looking to see what's there. That sounds this, that's a... We did one project where they had seven plants that made explosives in this one community. Seven. Now, the good news, bad news is, when by the time they would get there, response time wise, there wouldn't be a whole lot to do other than put out the forest. But potentially. But, you know, people take advantage of those situations sometimes, because they don't want to be in the limelight. They don't want to be downtown. They don't want to be in a community where there's going to be a lot of poking and prodding. So they'll put these out in the rural communities.
And it's, wow. How long were you assigned in Afghanistan?
No, I'm too old for that.
So Sam.
Sam, I'm sorry.
No, I just want to bring Sam in on your community risk reduction point. And also Frank, when you get back in here, and if you're stabilized finally, I'd love to hear about Nick's idea about, you know, crew assignments that expand beyond one organization, which I thought was really brilliantly done. And also, you talked about Nick and John down in Phoenix at the Blue Card, and when mm-hmm. we were trying to plug in, and I remember the dilemma, because Alan and I've been doing assessment seminars for years and years, and Alan and I always struggled with assessments and training, because that it's so artificial. You know, you tell guys, okay, we want you to take the door, you know, or we're going to take the door. And in an assessment center, it's like, okay, now it's done, or in a simulation. And the reality is, you know, if it's a center locking armor door, you could be there 5-10 minutes. You know what I mean? Which is on the fire ground, it's like doggy years, right? You celebrated 2 birthdays, gone through 3 wives or husbands. You know what I mean? And you're like, you guys have that door yet? Your gals have that door yet? You know what I mean? So it's that how you do that, right? And I think the dilemma for the blue card folks, as they tried to go out nationally, and I'm not speaking for Nick and John, who I love dearly, but you know, how do you come up with to Nick's point, not every department can take a roof in, you know, 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 10 minutes.
No.
You know, it's going to vary depending on how many folks you have and what they know. So Sam, I didn't mean to jump in there, but.
No, I mean, so it's kind of speaking to that, you know, in this temp gig I'm in where I'm an acting battalion chief. I had I've had 2 significant fires. Both have had it right after action reports on the second one. So, you know, we have an incident response policy, which is similar to an SOP or an SOG that's kind of spells things out. Right. So I got there and I had a rapidly extending fire on the outside that got into the attic. So I really needed to split the first and second due engines. I needed to split the responsibility when our incident response policy says, you know, the second due engine's going to A, ensure the first line's in service, and then B, they're going to stretch a backup line. And so it was one of those things. It was like the second major fire I had been in charge of. And I had to make the decision to do it. It's one of those things. I wasn't going to let the IRP drive the incident when I knew the best action was to split the first 2 companies, have the first company hit the exterior fire, and the second company stretch in and start opening the attic up. And it worked. We saved the first floor and the basement, and even below like the 4-foot mark on the second floor, everything was other than the water and smoke damage was salvageable. So like furniture and that kind of stuff. So it worked well. I had to justify it, but it's one of those things that any action we do in the fire service, right, it has to be justifiable and defendable.
All right, Sam. So Sam, let me tell you my world. So, you need to really engineer the bejeebies, like that Martian movie. You got to engineer the bejeebies out of this thing, right? Here's my world. Same exact fire. Back porches are going bottom to top. One guy arrives by himself. This is before we upgraded. One guy arrives by himself. Pulls up, pulls the blitz fire. Gets down, goes laterally on the fire. He gets the blitz, goes back. He's by himself. Now a volunteer arrives. He puts the volunteer on the blitz fire. He goes back, and he charges off of tank water. So we got 2 things. We got an aggressive offensive tool that can provide adequate water for the fire hazard, and the tank on the truck is designed big enough that it's going to give us an extra couple minutes. Now the rest of the cavalry arrives, and in the article we talk about backup teams. So the rest of the force from my department arrives, plus my backup teams arrive. They take the second line right through the front door, and they stop it in the back room.
Beautiful.
Different world. No, so we had one guy on the – so we had the pump operator. He does the initial attack. Again, thinking small. He gets one guy to work that machine, work that nozzle. 2 more guys show up, or actually we turned into about 3 or 4 at that point. They went right through the front door. Water supply was part of that deal, and they held it. They held it right there. And so, that's again, awesome. Just that's our world. That's our world is sometimes you have to buy machine. And again, not to brag about that, let's just call it some part of lightweight portable monitor. You know, where do we get that from?
It's okay.
We got that from a rural.
That's a great company. Everybody makes great monitors if that's what the guys are using. You don't have to worry about that.
But so. we got that from a rural company up the street, up the river, because they would burn up a bunch of barns. And they said, you know what? We're going to buy that lightweight hose. We're going to put this on the end of it. We're going to use 3-inch lightweight hose. We're going to put this in the end. And I get about 500 gallons a minute out of that. And we said, whoa, we've got a lot of these situations where we have that flank. Let's do it. Let's do that. You know, let's do that. And now we call that, probably would call that transitional. But back then we called it put out the damn fire.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Let's darken the whole back of the house down.
Fastest water approach.
And to Nick's and Sam's point, just to, I want to get Frank in here too. Sorry, I didn't mean to take over your show, Frank. We're just having fun.
They're all your shows, Bob.
We've dropped all the politics crap. We're going straight to tactics. But which is interesting because the politics of a community define the tactics. If people don't have the money, and a lot of places just don't have the money.
They just don't have it.
You know what I mean? It's not that they don't want to pay their tax. They don't have it.
Yeah.
So I think what's interesting is that we've been throwing water through windows and doors and since Ben Franklin put the system together here. I mean, the transitional language and the studies, we're just looking at stuff we've been doing forever. I mean, you know, really, I mean, I remember when I first came on, occasionally you go up the front door of a place and the boss would say, hey, darken that down, give it a splash. Or the crews, somebody hit it from the ground. Chicago's been doing that in the high rise side since backdraft, you know, and before. So you know, the tastes like great, less filling stuff just drives me crazy. But Frank, what are your thoughts?
Well, one of the things that I'd like to bring up is that the fire service always tends to focus on the fire. And one of the problems across the country that we tend to be a little lacking on is the planning. Now, exactly. Nick, you talked about having everybody from Mutual Aid being on the same radio channel and understanding the game plan. That's great. But I think we need to, especially when it comes to volunteers around the country, is we need to look at ways to better front load the problem. And it takes a little planning. And I just want to give you just two quick examples. So Rockville, Maryland, I was a live-in. You know, there was a time where in Rockville, the volunteers had trouble getting out just because of life and things going on. So they knew that they either had to change or die. So they came up with the live-in program. So they provided room and board for college students to help with their staffing. Then they established duty nights because it was tough with school sports. I mean, when I was a kid, you played one practice and one game a week. Now when kids play sports, when COVID's over, they're playing 5-6 nights a week.
Yep.
So they came up with duty nights as volunteers. So they were supplemented by the live-ins and the paid personnel. But instead of having a volunteer that was responsible to go in every single day of the week for every call, they basically kind of said, hey, Tuesday night is your crew. You're going to eat, train with that Tuesday night crew. And then in the morning, you're gone and the next crew comes in. So they found ways to change. Mineola, New York, had problems getting volunteers out for alarm bells at night. So even though they were still responding from home, they came up with a plan and they said, okay, we're going to assign only 3 people a night that would have to get up from their house to go in for alarm bell calls so that it wasn't taxing the entire system. So it takes a little upfront planning, but I think that we owe it to the public we serve and the firefighters to try to think a little out of the box to figure something out. I mean, even in communities that don't have colleges, how often do we have a man or a woman who gets divorced and needs a place to stay? You know, hey, they're in the firehouse. The town I live in, Wallingford, had a proud volunteer tradition, and I gave them the live-in kind of idea from what I got from Rockville. They didn't want to hear it. Well, 2 of their volunteer companies now out of the 4 are closed. So sometimes you got to change and you got to figure out to keep what's going on great. Bobby?
Well, I think, and Nick pointed out some really neat ideas inside that article. And again, I hate to harp on it so much, but I hope people listening to this go look at it. It's an incredibly, incredibly deep piece. I mean, I think that Nick probably could have, I think there's 8 or 10 other articles inside of that thing, Nick, really. I mean, you could take each point. Right? Don't you feel the same way, Sam? I mean, when I was reading that thing, I kept thinking, okay, man, Nick could have, you could pull out like 2 or 3 paragraphs when Nick hits a topic. So one of the topics Nick talks about is the whole idea of calling in mutual aid, assistance, help, right? And a comment was made to him that his city manager or whatever said, we ought to call it immediately, just based on what was going on in your community, which is okay. He wasn't being pejorative. He wasn't being mean. He wasn't questioning anybody's, you know, virility or capability or anything else. He was just saying, here's the reality. You know, we need more folks. Honest to God, that's what the whole blue card thing was created from. That the blue card idea, when I first presented it years ago to Alan, grew out of a wildland fire we had in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we were able to put 600 people on the ground at the same time for, I don't know, about 72 hours, maybe longer, close to 80 some odd hours, nonstop, over 600 people, continuous. But we wasted everybody. So we came up with this idea that for career jobs, like Albuquerque, like smaller, the metros you described, Nick, the whole idea behind Blue Card was not, and you needed a curriculum, and Nick and John gave us that, which is great, and they've done a beautiful job. But what the next part of it that I had always hoped for was that Bipperville and Bopperville, if they all train the same and have the same terminology and understand each other's equipment, the off-duty roster should be available to both of them or all of them in that area to call people back to come to work and pay them if necessary to help them take care of events. Not necessarily bring the apparatus, but just have access to Bipperville and Bopperville and Kipperville and Copperville, to quote Mike Mulligan and Mary Ann from, remember Mike Mulligan and Mary Ann, the steam shuttle? The remember the children's book? One of my favorite books of all time. But anyway, so no, really, it was a great book because Mike Mulligan bet that Mary Ann could dig as much dirt in one day as 100 men could, and then along came these diesel steam shovels. And it's a great book. You got go Google Mike Mulligan and Mary Ann, and it's a wonderful book. Anyway, so the idea was numbers, just sheer numbers. And it didn't matter if somebody showed up wearing Montgomery County, and it didn't matter if somebody showed up with Simsbury or Albuquerque. It didn't matter. It mattered that they understood the system and could plug into the system.
You know? Let me add a couple of things, Bobby. Because mutual aid. Everybody was fine with calling mutual aid once you got there and saw that you really needed them. And that was our weakness. Now we're very close. Our neighbors are very close to us, so we had some relatively good response times, but not good enough. So it was actually the chairman of the safety committee. We're in a meeting, and we used to have a very robust volunteer company. Matter of fact, the firefighters weren't called firefighters; they were called drivers because they never had to do anything other than pump and drive. So, but anyway, that dwindles and dwindles. Now he had the audacity to say, "We got to call for help before we get there," and that was really that really shook us up. So a couple things. Let me talk about one problem I see across the country. There's mutual aid and there's mutual abuse. So, you know, being willing to go to your neighbor and help them out when they need help is a great thing. Going over to your neighbor when they can't do their workload and taking care of their business, that goes for a little while until you hit a trigger point. And the trigger points I mentioned are you're there before they are. You show up and they don't show up. You're in their district. Let's say it's a specialized piece, a ladder, a tank, or a rescue, whatever. You're in their district with a tanker more than you use the tanker in your district. Someone on some council, not the receivers, but the givers, are going to say, why is my tanker over in Hooterville more than it is used here? Why did we buy this so you could send it over there all the time? And that'll cause enough friction to have a conversation. Sometimes it's just a contract, it's a mutual aid agreement, or whatever it may be. But sometimes it's like, and I've seen this, we actually got called in on a project where the elected official says, you can't go there anymore with this piece of apparatus. It's costing us too much, and we're not getting anything back.
And that was the point of Blue Card, Nick, in a way. Sometimes you just need the people. You don't need them to drive their apparatus or strip their community. You just need whoever else is not engaged at the time. And one of the things that I know from being associated with my volunteer friends out here, it's very rare in this part of where I live for two events, fire events, to be happening simultaneously. Very rare. EMS, different story. But fire, very rare.
And we can run those. I mean, we do a lot with Excel. We can run those numbers and give you percentages.
Right.
The second thing, but so let's go to the, and we used, we being this close to New York City, we used the, we ended up developing the second source. So if we get a straight box or whatever comes in, just the on-duty crew went, or just our firefighters went. However, second call, we still have municipal boxes. A municipal box comes in with it. The lady calls back and says, now it's eating the cabinets in the kitchen. A cop pulls up and there's smoke showing. That trips additional resources. And then in the article, it talks about over time, it started out, we were very lucky. We had two stations with an industrial department right in the middle who wanted to get out, really wanted to get out, and we wanted to have them because they were very well trained. So we went to a plus, they came with us, and this was for two in, two out. Their whole job when this first started was to find the line and find the butt, find the line and find the person in front of them, keep their eyes on them, because we needed to do that. And then over time, we built it to the plus, where we started really doing a good risk assessment right down to fire flows, size of the building, hazards to get there. And that's when we added that other piece where we said, listen, we actually need an additional engine and truck here, or we need an additional engine here. But again, not on every call, but if it tripped that wire, if it tripped the second source, then we would send those resources. Sam, do you know anything like that up down south? Where, how does that
down south? He's talking to a guy in Montgomery County down south. I got buddies in Alabama right now. I want to kick your ass. That's the South, brother. He's a Northerner. He's a tried and true Northerner, man.
Our communication center. I know, right?
Nick's the kind of guy who says I'm gonna go out west for a vacation. I'm going to Jersey.
Going to Although the way the weather's been these days, it feels like we're down south for sure. But our communication center has the latitude to dispatch. We have a rapid intervention dispatch that brings us. It basically builds out the rapid intervention group on the scene, but we can use those folks for other things. And again, my most recent significant fire, once the fire was docked, it was a summer day. It was July 2nd. And we ended up rotating some of the rapid intervention crews in to mop up. Right. So I called for additional resources, but they were coming from a distance away. We were able to engage those crews that were already on the scene. So yeah, our communication center has the latitude to add extra resources to an incident based on what they're hearing. And a lot of times it is, the police are everywhere. It seems like they get on the scene. Even if we're working codes with us, the police have like a box tone in our county. And you'll hear it for working codes. We listen as battalion chiefs, we listen to the police radio because they stumble upon so much stuff, and it gives us a lead time to kind of, get the game plan in motion. But you'll hear the cop box. You'll hear the cop box go up for a working code, and those guys, they're driving like maniacs to get to this working code, but they have AEDs and they know how to do CPR and they've actually they've affected a number of saves, just that forward thinking of the police to get in there and do that. But anyway, yeah, so we have that. Our communications center being a forward thinking entity of our department, they have the latitude to add those extra resources. Yeah.
One thing that needs to be considered, to go back to what Bobby was saying about personnel, and this goes for career departments and volunteer, whether you're small or not. Remember, accountability is still the key to safety on the fire ground. So there are going to be times, even in a city, where they're going to put somebody else to work who's not there. It could be somebody from an off shift, but you got to remember that that's got to go through command. And even if you're on the rear of the building and you got to get your radio and say, I have firefighter so-and-so with us, helping us put up a ladder. That way they're accounted for. You would think that accountability isn't an issue anymore, but Connecticut, Nick's from Connecticut too. I've never met him before, but we go back to the Eddie Ramos fire in Brantford. If I remember the story correctly, No one knew that Eddie Ramos was
on the scene
until the next morning when they saw his car there after the building collapsed. So you can't just put people to work. It's dangerous. It's got to go through command. And that doesn't mean, especially in a volunteer department, it doesn't mean that they have to go to the command post and tag in, depending on what your system is. But as soon as somebody sees this person in there, in some authority, you're going to put this person where, at least pick up the radio and say to command, I have this person with me.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to account for that person. Sam, you're now that you're an acting battalion chief, I'm sure you've experienced on these last two fires, even when it's all set up, not what even Nick said dealing with, but even when it's all set up for experienced fire ground officers, it's difficult tracking dynamic crews. You know who's there, but do you know what they're doing? Can you speak a little to that? Because I'm sure that goes through your mind.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've even had, so, you know, we have, it's talking about like the industrial fire department that you had running with you up there, Nick. We have federal fire departments in our jurisdiction that we run with, and they have chief officers. They have roster chief officers. So I've had on one incident, we're in the middle of this thing that, you know, the fire's being knocked, and I hear that a chief officer from the federal company pipe up, and he's on the second floor, and I had no interaction with that. I didn't know he's on the scene, you know. So it's one of those things. As soon as you identify it, of course, I made him the division two supervisor, and put him, you know, in an official capacity. But yeah, you from time to time, even when you know who your units are, you're tracking your units. We do charting. You know, we have a tactical worksheet that we chart on, and we write the units down. And as we assign the units in the divisions or groups, you know, we cross them out on the resource side, so we know exactly where they are, and know what our capacity is or for the rest of the incident. But even then, sometimes you assign somebody to a certain area or task, and they get there, and as they're going there, they come across something, right? So, and sometimes that always isn't readily communicated either. You'll call for division two and they'll say, oh, we're up here on the third floor doing such and such. And you're like, but you know, and then that's when you have to, okay, they're not freelancing. They just came across this other issue in their assigned area, and you have to get your hands around it. Right.
So to Frank's point though,
Nick, in your department, your crews are even more dynamic than we would find in a city or a county situation where people are pretty much assigned to tasks because they're going to be moving around because there's less of them. So how do you keep the accountability in that situation?
So are you asking me?
Yes, sir.
Because I'm a jerk. I'm pretty straightforward. I'm a big jerk when it comes to accountability. Started a long time ago with, we had the term that some of my guys used were gypsies. I called them freelancers, where they would just drift in, create a lot of havoc, break a lot of stuff, and then drift out, and they wouldn't even stay to pick up the hose. So we had to lock this down. And if you're in my neighborhood or in my sphere of influence down here, just mention my name and they'll tell you about tags. I am a jerk when it comes to this. So when you come into the game, you come in on an alarm. We don't take anybody that's not with a company. If you're ahead of your company, you stand over there until someone from your company absorbs you and then gets into the manpower bin, because we actually run a manpower bullpen. When whoever it is, when they come in to check in, they don't come to me. They go to the guy that's running the manpower, who I give a direction to as to where to go and what to do. So they go check in. We have a very aggressive, we actually have three levels of tags. So we actually, as a result of Eddie Ramos, and he had a tag, the problem is he left it on the dashboard of his car. So we have the essentially that concept where it's the pickup tag. So it gets hooked onto the truck, and then at the end of the day, or at the end of the call, if there's a tag left, we have a problem. We call it passive tagging. I call it dead guy tagging, whatever you want to call it. It's somebody's not back and we have to go figure it out. The second one we have is we have fledged accountability officers. Matter of fact, that's what I do after I retired, I went back to my hometown and I'm the accountability and safety guy at Jobs, and because I'm a jerk. And so they know that if you want to get in the game, you better walk up with a chain full of tags. If you don't have a chain full of tags, you're not getting in the game. You got to send somebody back to the truck, get the tags and come up, or we'll make tags for you. You're not getting into the game with a without a tag. I can't do that. And then I have a person, and we have all these setups where you tag in, the guy writes down where you're doing, what you're doing, and where you're going. And when you come out, you got to go back to him and say, I'm out and over in staging. We actually developed a really good, it wasn't me, the chief of Norwich, Ken Scandariato, did a great job of developing a flow chart where you literally draw lines with that company as they come in and out of whatever the assignment is. And we use that, and we use it aggressively. And that goes to that, you know, the agreement we made as chiefs is, if I'm sending a cover company, I'm not even going to the call. My guys aren't even going to the call, but I'm moving a piece of apparatus. I'm getting up, I'm getting dressed, and I'm going to the command post. And I'm going to help that chief out. We run command as a team, almost like Bruno did with the senior advisors, similar. But I have guys, just because of how we've learned over years, that they're going to show up at this amount, at this time. Matter of fact, we tried to use Billy G's system, but we didn't need to be that flexible. We just, because the same guy showed up or their department showed up at the same time. So we have guys that always do safety. We have guys that always do water supply. We have guys that always do the rapid intervention team or a group. I really appreciate that because most people don't think about that. And rapid intervention is not rapid. So we have people that do that stuff all the time. But one of those guys is the accountability guy. And if God help you, if I find you inside and we don't know you're in there, number one, you're never going to play on my fire ground again. I don't care who you come with. And then number two, we're going to have a conversation with your boss. Because all the bosses signed on to this and said, nope, we're going to tag them. This is what we're going to do. We're going to tag them. This is what we're going to do. So if I have someone who's breaking the agreement, essentially the trust that I have that they're going to take care of their people, and they break that trust with me, then we're going to have a conversation. And we're going to say, listen, you just can't be doing that. We need to know everybody. I spend a lot of time. I was one of the chief-to-chief folks for the National Fire and Firefighters Foundation. A good friend of us, Bobby, Danny Krasinski, spent a lot of time with Danny. And talk about duty nights. He runs a great duty night down in East Franklin, New Jersey. And I've dealt with a lot of chief officers that have lost guys. And so I'm very passionate about this. So I don't care if you like it. I don't care if you don't ever come back to my fire again. That's on you. But if you come into this, if you came into the city, you tagged in. Again, I have one guy that was just really good about, he just balanced the people. I'd say I need a team to go do this. Boom, done. Boom, done. It just worked for us. Now it doesn't work for everybody, but it worked for us. And I said, we're hard about it. I was a real jerk about it.
And so there's two things that Nick has said here, and I just want to dovetail just really quickly before Sam and Frank jump in. This is really important. I remember when Precious Faith Tabernacle Fire happened, I think it was like 95, maybe 93. But remember in Texas, the Precious Faith Tabernacle Fire happened down in Texas outside of Fort Worth. A young firefighter perished there, and they were unaware of the fact he was there until they located his body. The Fort Worth guys found his body. And it wasn't due to anybody's negligence. It wasn't due to bad firefighting. It just happens. No one imagines losing someone. No one. And he'd actually arrived and rode in on the engine. And it was heartbreaking. And they're some of the best firefighters you're ever going to want to meet. Those guys, they just are, wonderful people. So to Nick's point, accountability isn't just about the tags. And now we're moving into these electronic systems where your phone will log you in and other systems like that. And I get it, which are great and necessary. But what's even more great and even more necessary is that human connection and maintaining it, and then backing up your electronic system with a physical system, with a human system, and you know, accountability, to put it quite frankly, and I can't remember exactly who to credit with this, is not just being on a tag ring and not just being in an electronic system, but me being able to reach out and grab your happy ass as a supervisor at some point in time. That's accountability. That's crew integrity. Absent that, you got squat. And you called them, you know, death tags or whatever. I mean, you know, knowing. But so those systems are so critical. In Europe, they have the SCBA guy who, or gal, who checks your air as you're going in. And maybe someday we'll get to that point too as well. And I think a lot of our electronic systems can do that for us. But and to my second point, and I'll let that go because you guys were very eloquent about the whole deal. To my second point about what Nick said, if you're joining the fire service to be popular or loved, you're joining the wrong organization. I would rather have 1,000 Nicks working with me or 100 Nicks working with me than Mr. Lovey-Dovey or Mr. or Mrs. Lovey-Dovey. I want people who care more about the work and the responsibility of the work and the accountability of the work than their popularity. It's not a popularity contest, you know, and I want hard, strong, tough people. That's what I want. And I want to keep them hard and I want to keep them strong and I want to keep them tough by having systems like mental health and support groups and all the other good stuff that we have. That's what keeps us hard. That's what keeps us strong. That's what keeps us tough. And while I was making an excuse to use the restroom by saying I was getting another cup of coffee, which I did, but I had to use the restroom first, the tough gal who came walking in here, that 67-year-old beautiful woman of mine, just got home from having cancer surgery on her leg. She's not even supposed to be walking. She's got a 14-inch incision down her. God. That ain't keeping her in bed. You know, she's tough and she's strong, but she's probably the most compassionate person you'd ever want to meet. But you screw with her, like on the fire ground, you fail to put your rings on, and the conversation she's going to have with you will involve a boot up your ass so far that you'll be tasting shinola for the rest of the week. And you know, and Nick, don't make no apologies for being tough and strong. People should apologize for being weak and I don't mean weak in a, we're all vulnerable. I don't mean weak in being vulnerable and being open and being caring. I mean being more worried about being popular than being professional, more worried about being liked than doing the right thing to take care of the first, the folks who called us, and second, the men and women were responsible for taking care of our firefighters, you know. And to, we're going down a rabbit hole with this popularity stuff that I just makes my head explode.
If I could just add one more thing. Listen, I'm part of a very special club that nobody wants to be in. I lost a guy. In fact, he died on me twice. The first time, luckily, if you're going to drop dead, you land on top of a bunch of firemen's feet. That's the place to do it. We resuscitated him, brought him back. He actually was my first accountability guy. He was the patriarch of one of the companies. He was a pit bull. And so he was tough. So I'm part of a group that I never asked to be part of. And as a result of that, I'm not doing that again. Not if I can do it. Not if I can help it. I'm not doing that again. I'm just not. So if we have to spend more money to get better gear, if we need all the bailout systems, all those things. In fact, when I come back from the shows, they'd be all nervous because I was going to start another program of something like that. We're going to spend more money on some new gizmo that the boss saw while he was at the FDIC or the I-Chiefs or, you know, whatever it was. I'm sorry. I'm monopolizing.
No, you're not. This is a conversation, man.
Yeah.
This is a good conversation. You know, and you know, if you look at Montgomery County, how many folks work in that system?
1,400, I think 1,200 some uniformed on the floor, and then, yeah.
There's no way you're going to know who everybody is. There's just no way. Yeah. I mean, that's a big organization, 1,400 people. And then you get into people like FDNY where you're talking 14,000. You know what I mean? The guys go to jobs, they meet somebody in New York City, they'll never meet the guy again or gal. You know, they, you know,
the, they do a rotation. One of the things that we did talk about, and it goes back to the Montgomery County. So one of the things that we did do when we built the cards, we're only so much resources in such a space. So we had folks that had 15-minute, 20-minute response times in on the upper alarms. So what we did, what again, we saw from New York, is we relocated them. So if you were first due on the third alarm, you moved to a station on the second alarm. And then we had a company that was at the state, that the second alarm, that was just a unbelievable EMS company, really strapped in, knew what they were doing, and knew the turf. So we gave them that job for the whole time. So that company relocated on the first alarm, and they stayed there. And they were the tour guide and the communicator for everybody else. And they covered, 65% of what we did, which was the medical. So that relocation concept, again, I'm sure they do it. They have the authority to do that. We're going to move you closer because you might be the next whatever it is in.
Yeah, or you're just filling in for those busy areas. We have a our communication center has a piece of technology called Live Mom, Live Move Up Monitor, and it monitors the actions of all of our units, and it gives you a suggestion, and it's dynamic. So it's an at-a-glance thing. So you don't have to hit enter or hit load or hit, I need to know, for this box alarm. It's always moving, and it's pretty neat technology. It kind of keeps you on your, it allows you to do it quicker, because the way it used to be done, it was just, hey, well, I know 26 is always in quarters, I'm going to move them, or I know this company is always here, I'm going to move them. They're centrally located. Now it's based on time, time and distance. And
don't get me wrong, I'm not a Luddite. I'm not opposed to technology at all. I think it's wonderful. But I think we have to be very careful about becoming like overly dependent on some electronic system, to the detriment of, not having a good, one of my favorite movies is the old, the Mr. Rogers character, the Apollo 13 movie with when the guy takes all the computers and throws them off the table and takes out a piece of paper and here's the moon, here's the earth. He draws the line, and you're like, if you can't do that, then your system's broken. You know what I mean?
Well, so let's talk about accountability from crew integrity. Again, this is the wild card. This is the thing that used to keep me up at night, or I would be on, I'd be like kind of wrapped tight around the axle about. So we have four guys going in. It's a fire. The evolution was the shift commander is driving the first two engine. I mean, it's not the best of choice decisions, but it is what it is. So again, mission, get one line in place. Well, the ladder truck guy, he's going to set the ladder where it's going to be needed in like 20 minutes. He's going to get on the line. He's going to help take the door. He's going to be the second guy on that line going in. Now, with the advent of the backup team and with the plus group, it gave us a little bit more flexibility. But in the early days, we didn't have that. So you've got some number of guys on that first line. And when Maydays happen, they happen all over the building. It's not just like one little area. When the Father's Day explosion happened, it blew up the building. I mean, it's not just one little tiny space. So that was always one of my big concerns. So we were very hawkish about that, needing to know, because we've had a couple of times where we just didn't get to the seat of the fire and we had to transition back out. Worst nights of my life. And I would not let them turn on the tower until I personally saw, you talk about the face-to-face, Bobby, until I personally saw the guy that I knew was on that nozzle, we were not opening that line. I didn't care what anybody told me. I didn't care what the division boss said. I didn't care. I needed to see the guy that was on that team and make sure. And then when he told me that the other two were out, then I told him, go ahead, put it out. Because again, I'm not going to, we're not going to do that. We're not going to rain fire and hell down on someone who's in there just trying to do their job and make the right decisions. So we were just very passionate about that. And when we built in the system, so that, again, to go to the end of the article, as Bobby mentioned before, we easily met 1910. We easily met 1910 within the 8 minutes I was there. We had all those people, and some of those people had to travel a little bit of distance to get there. But we had all those jobs. You know, I was very lucky. I got to spend some time out in Phoenix, and I got to sit in the battalion car in the simulator and to listen to those guys, you know, beating on the door on the computer, right, is to, you know, to see it work. And again, Colchester, I got to give them credit. I actually mentioned their name in that. This was a group where they did a bunch of training nights, and they said, all right, how long is it going to take to do this, and how many people? They came up with, and they've got it all written out. They came out with 22 people. In their system, they need 22 people to really, and that's putting 3 and 4 people on a line and all that. But they came up with 22 people. There's what, in their rural, because don't forget, there's a whole rural application there where there's a dump tank and tankers and a designated engine for drafting and all that. So that added more beef to their operation. But that's how they did it. They just trained on it. They took all the times and they said, that's too long for us to get this. We got to do it in this time. And that's what they wrote their strategic plan on. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. It just doesn't.
I think that in your article, you do a really good job of letting folks know that, you know, and the NFPA is an incredibly wonderful organization. The standards are phenomenal. But the problem for a lot of us is that our worldview is predicated on where we live, right?
Exactly.
What we're used to. So if you're a Connecticut guy, a Boston guy, a Montgomery County fella, or LA fella, or, you know, you see the world kind of differently. Philadelphia gal, you see the world kind of differently than somebody in Laramie, Wyoming, or 100 miles outside of Sioux Falls. You know what I mean? And so, and I'm not disrespecting it. I'm one of those people that likes those. I live in an area like that. I like the country. I like rural America. I prefer it to the city. But I also understand that I'm not getting the A&M brass band at every fire we go to. I'm getting who's there. You know what I mean? And so your article was wonderful in saying, let's first understand what the potential risks are. Then let's look at what resources are out there. And then let's get what systems we can harden to ensure the safety and survivability of everybody who shows up. Everybody. Irrespective of their capabilities, because you mentioned a couple of departments where they had a, I think you said a 72 and a 75 year old.
Yeah, yeah. They were fine until he had a stroke. They were actually over in Italy and they were spry. I had a kick out of them. I said that Sam would get a kick out of this, talking about codes. So I said, well, how many people do you have riding on the ambulance? Well, we always try for 3. I said, oh, you're going to do the new, you know, the new pit stop CPR? And they both looked at me and go, no, we got to get the guy in the back of the ambulance because they were like this big. But they were, I mean, they were it. And they did really good until they went away on vacation. And he actually had a stroke over in Italy. And then when they came back, he was definitely out, but he couldn't be left alone, you know.
I like to consider myself spry. That would be because I'm closer to their age than yours, Nick. So
I tell you, they did really good. I tell you, some of these are, and that's the problem with trying to answer a lot of, you know, everybody's needs. I've had students at the academy where, you know, they're from somewhere on Colorado or Montana or Kansas or Wyoming, it doesn't matter. And they're in this 700 square mile county, right? And they've got like 3 stations.
That's a big job.
And to pick on NFPA, but if you're in 1720, right, and I think if you're considered rural, you have to have 6 people there in like 14 minutes or something. Listen, if you start a barn on fire and it takes you 14 minutes to get there, you're gonna need more than 6, or you're not gonna need any because you'll be just wetting out the grass, right? It'll be a brush fire. So that's the tough part. That's why it's so hard to try to build a system. And that's why, you know, again, they talk about engineering. In Connecticut, we just can't get our heads wrapped around residential sprinklers. So I am in a farmhouse and I'm 10 minutes from the station. I get 2 275s in the basement, a little pump, we'll figure it out, we're farmers. We don't throw anything away, we just keep fixing it, right? So we hook up the thing up, let's say we get one that the fire marshal will approve if there is a fire marshal. And we have a kitchen fire, or we have a bedroom fire. and it's going to take 10 minutes for the boys to get the girls to get there. Guess what? 10 minutes worth of water. Maybe you make it bigger. Now, instead of there being nothing, the main house is going and the barn's next. Now, maybe it is just a can job or a one-line job, you know?
Well, you know, it's funny you should say stuff. I used to live in a ranching community. I used to live outside of the King Ranch.
Oh, my
God. And the King Ranch was 700 miles. Yeah. Just that ranch.
Yeah.
Just one ranch. So when you start talking about stuff, I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. But it's a different kind of folk that live out there. My wife and I have relocated to about 30 miles north of Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is, we consider that the inner city, because folks here got running water and such. So, but when we have one of those fires, Nick, we call them y'all come fires.
Yeah.
Y'all come. Yeah. So it's a different deal. But this has been a wonderful conversation, and I think that what's nice about it is that, and I hope folks reach out to you, Nick and Sam, and I know Frank can put you in touch with just about anybody, but you did a great job on that article, and Sam's always got great insights into, you know, you do, man.
Thank you. You're
a phenomenal, you're a phenomenal guy. Both of you are, you're phenomenal guys. And you know, just the points that Nick has in that article about the leadership stuff alone is worth reading, because, you know, it's gritty, and it's real, and it's not, and it's coming from a guy who, as Nick has said, lost a friend and a fellow firefighter at a fire. You know, someone who should have walked out alive did not. And so you don't want to ever know what he knows. And when you understand that that's his worldview, all that grittiness makes a lot of sense, because it's not, you know, he's not pretending to care. He really cares. And it came through in the article. I mean,
thank you. I really appreciate that.
Wonderful thing. And I can't thank you enough for doing it. And so it was really wonderful. So I know Frank has been having internet issues, and we apologize. Out here in rural Oklahoma, we apparently have stronger internet than the inner city of New Haven, Connecticut.
I've never had these issues before, so this is surprising, but we're at the witching hour. I want to thank Nick.
Frank, that happens to all of us. I mean, you don't have to explain it to me. There's all kinds of products that you can buy online now. And
I can't stay on long enough to get them, though. That's the problem. So, but I want to thank Sam, Bobby, Nick from coming on today. But there, a story came across on Firefighter Nation today that I just want to quickly mention, because it's such a great story about being small, and we talked a little bit about accountability today. So in Union Township, Pennsylvania, a volunteer was going to a landscaping job. He saw some smoke, checked it out. When he got there, somebody said, there's a kid, a 12-year-old, trying to break out the window on the second floor. And lo and behold, he called dispatch to update. Dispatched to say that there was a kid hanging out on the second floor. And the dispatcher had the wherewithal to say, there's a barn on the property. Maybe you can get a ladder in the barn. He got the ladder from the barn and made the grab and still kept in contact with dispatch. So they knew he was operating on scene and saved the girl. So you can be so small and make a big
difference. That's wonderful, Frank. And I read that article this morning. Thank you for bringing that up. But to Nick's point, when you're, and Sam's point, when you're doing your community risk assessment, you learn things like that. Like, hey, there's a painting company two blocks away. They've got ladders. You know, hey, there's a, you know what I mean? In other words, it's not just looking at the threats. It's looking at the opportunities and the assets. And you know, I can't, you know, a good friend of mine used to run Montgomery County Fire, and still a dear friend of mine. He's now living in Hawaii, and used to give him such a hard time. He wasn't a firefighter, by the way, also. He was in the trucking industry. And was made the I know it was called like the director or something. Sam, you have like a director or something?
Yeah, we used to have a director of fire rescue, and then it transitioned in the mid 90s to a chief.
Right, and this was before the chief from Charleston. It was just before the before
Tommy. It was
Tommy. It was
it Granadas?
No. He was Japanese and from Hawaii.
I'll think of it here.
Wonderful guy.
Gordon Aoyagi.
Gordon Aoyagi.
Yeah.
Gordon Aoyagi.
Oh,
Gordon
a great, great guy. Excellent.
Super guy. But Gordon understood logistics and asset management like nobody else. And Montgomery County is huge. I mean, it's huge and it's complex and it's a monster. And Gordon did a great job. Gordon was not a firefighter. He'd be the first guy to tell you he didn't tinker on the edges like that, but he knew how to organize and still a lot of what he established for you guys, you still use. And
oh, absolutely. And he loved the job. He loved the firefighters and he loved the job. And, you know, he was obviously that paid dividends with the troops.
He actually was a member of Baggers with us. And back when Baggers was very small and he was the brunt of thousands of relentless jokes from some really cruel guy. A really cool guy, because it was, you know, during the whole wax on, wax off thing, movie was playing Karate Kid, and the guy had the same name. So I used to just give him so much grief, and he loved it, because it made him feel like, you know, if we don't mess with you, we don't like you.
Right,
you
know what I mean? Right.
That's like rule number one. And so, anyway, Frank, I'm sorry we went a little over. I know you've got to go out and trash some Democrats or something, whatever you do for a living now.
Well, I do apologize to our listeners, because we said that we would talk a little bit about the IFF, and because of connection issues. So the next show, we're going to do a little bit more focus. We will reissue our invite again to Eddie Kelly and Harold Schatzberger. And I think it is something that needs to be explored a little bit more. And I have some new information that's quite disturbing. But everybody gets equal air on fire engineering. So we will see if they come on and... thank you very much, Nick. Great article. I'll tweet it out when I leave work tonight.
Thank you, Bobby Hall.
And it's always an honor to have you. And Sam, it's great to see you. And you all take care today.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, guys. God bless.
Thanks, Bobby.